Have you ever listened to the pod and thought it would be awesome if Jen stopped being nerdy about movies for 60 seconds and talked about your business instead? Well, my friends, you're in luck. Watch with Jen is looking for sponsors. Do you own or run a theater, bookstore, film fest, website, school, physical media firm, pod, streaming channel, or small business that might like to advertise on Watch with Jen? Whether you're interested in sponsoring one episode or several, please reach out. You can get a hold of me at contact@filmintuition.com. Thanks so much. Hey, this is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen. So joining me once again, we have my very good friend, Nikki Dolson, who is a talented crime writer, one of my favorite short story writers working today. You have to read her work. She's fabulous. I love that she so often will center her stories on women going through, you know, everyday situations, but with a twist, and a twist you don't expect. So I always love that. She's a master at her craft. Nikki, it is so great having you back. How are you doing?
Thank you for having me again. I'm very well. You know, it's the winter, I guess, is technically over, but the weather is so weird. It's just, I'm sitting here in a sweater in Vegas, and I think it's 70, but I'm also like, it's cold. It's cold.
Yeah, because we have like no humidity with it. Like yesterday, I was wearing a sweater. And it's going to be right now I'm in a short sleeve shirt. This is now it's called Watch with Jen, the weather podcast. No, but, and then in a couple days we're like hitting the 90s. So we're, yes. I'm in Phoenix, Nikki's in Vegas, you know, deal with it, people. You're talking to people who live in desert climates. So we're going to be a little insufferable about the weather, but it's spring at least. Everything is in bloom. Yes. Allergies are kicking, but the flowers are up. So is Vegas looking really pretty lately?
Vegas has been very windy. I'm sure there are things in bloom because my allergies are insane right now.
Yeah.
But it's windy desert weather right now for me.
Yeah.
It would be probably much the same for you, but you have pretty blooms happening where you are.
Yeah, there are some blooms happening. Our bougainvillea out in the atrium is in full bloom, and that's always gorgeous. But what's hilarious, it's fun to kind of sit out there and read occasionally, but it grows so quickly that like every once in a while you need a guy with almost like a chainsaw. We've had, you know, different types of power tools out there to like chop it down. Otherwise, it takes over the entire atrium. So it's sort of like Little Shop of Horrors in Phoenix. Doesn't everyone want to come to Phoenix now? No, I'm just kidding. But so with the wind, it's the perfect time to, you know, hang out and watch a bunch of movies, which Nikki did this weekend and I've done lately. We are here to talk about an actress. Nikki and I are in the same age group, and we remember seeing her from a young age in the like early 90s all the way up to today, because she is extremely prolific. Originally, she was billed as Tandy Newton, but her birth name is actually Melanie Tandaway Newton, but now she has corrected the record. She wants to use her name, and so she is going by Tandiway Newton. So that is what we're going to go with. I hope my pronunciation is okay. I'm going with Vanity Fair here, fingers crossed. But we love her. Originally saw her in Flirting, the John Dweegan film, which we wanted to talk about so badly, and I know we're going to allude to it now, but unfortunately it's not streaming a lot of places, especially in America. It's hard to find. But Nikki, tell me about your history with Tandaway Newton and where you first saw her, which I believe is Flirting, and just your overall impressions of this great actress.
So I think Flirting came out in 91,
Yeah.
I don't think I saw it till years later. Probably 93 or 94. Maybe it was like on HBO or Showtime, one of those two. And I'm watching this and she was just, I don't honestly remember enough of the plot, but there is the boy and,
was it Noah Taylor?
I think the girl. So. And, yeah, I think so. But and the character that Tandaway was playing was named Tandaway. that she played and similar to, I guess, what Newton's actual background is, but she was just I don't even know, like she was just enthralling to watch. Like I was just so caught up and I'm like, who is this person? I've
right
never
next
seen her
to
before.
Nicole Kidman. Yes.
Yeah. You know, and I was just like, I don't know who she is. And I kept like my eye on her and tried to watch as much as I could. But again, I feel like after that movie, she went away and maybe did just more UK television. It looks like from her record. But it's like that moment and seeing her in Flirting was instant fan. From that moment on, it's such a great movie. She was so great. And I think she's a couple years older than I am. So she was maybe 20, 21 in that movie. Yeah. And just to be that excellent so early, it was so clear to me that she was just, you know, she should be a big star is what I'm saying.
Yeah. Incredibly talented and super bright, went to Cambridge, a degree in social anthropology, also a background in dance. And just got into acting as a teen, I believe, and, you know, kind of never looked back. She was in, I think Flirting had been filmed in the late 80s, released in 91. And then, in America, we wouldn't have seen it probably till about like 93, 94-ish. And then,
younger in that grade. Oh,
yeah. So she probably was now that we're thinking about it. But, you know, she was also in Beloved, which came out in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wasn't a huge fan of that one, but it was a huge role for her. She was in another one that John Dwegan made, The Leading Man, which we'll talk about today, which Nikki was new to, but I was a fan of back in the 90s. Mm-hmm. Like any indie, I just kind of lived at the video store and brought home everything. And then, you know, she just kind of went from there into bigger movies like the second Mission Impossible, which she kind of credits Nicole Kidman, her good friend. She said she never outright asked her if that's what got her the role, but she's pretty sure that, you know, she said, made the joke of, you and your wife were talking about who should I pretend to shag for the next 6 months. Might be good sometimes if you choose a very good friend of yours. So, so Nicole kind of maybe helped, like, this is a woman that I'm comfortable with, because she said it's a weird profession and, you know, you're getting close with someone over that many months. Mm-hmm. And then she did more TV, more film, a lot of cool British films and, you know, HBO audiences, like The Next Generation, kind of discovered her on Westworld. There was also a show called Rogue, which was good. Is that
the
one?
That was the one I'd seen. Yes. Loved her in that. Yes.
Yeah.
That was so great. And a different spin on her.
Yeah, it was a darker, she's kind of a bad girl. She did leave in the third season, I think I read, because, I mean, it was an explicit show. And I think, you know, they were often putting her in not great situations. And I can't imagine after a while that would be fun to play. I'm just guessing. I have no idea if that's the reason why, but I think I remember her saying she wanted to be more vocal about those roles. Like people were saying they were surprised when she took on Westworld because she's playing, you know, someone who works in a brothel and she's a feminist and involved with Time's Up and all of these things and has spoken about some of her early experiences. And she said, you know, it's a way to sort of address some of these things that she wanted to and a different side of her that she doesn't, you know, indulge, take agency, kind of like maybe that that thing with Holly Hunter where she likes to take roles that completely terrify her or that are so different from her. Yeah. So she's a courageous actress and a good one. And I was so glad you chose her.
Yeah, I was just like, who is it? Like, I don't see talked about enough. And and it's her for me. So, I mean, after Flirting, you know, the Mission Impossible movies came out around that same time.
Yeah.
And then you get to the second one, and there she is, Naya Nordahl, as like the Ethan Hunt's objective. And he's just head over heels for her. You can see it clearly. Like,
yeah,
the scene where the flamenco dancer, where they first meet across the room.
Oh my gosh.
And then that whole, probably the best meet cute that Tom Cruise has ever done, as far as for me. Like, how they meet in that movie, that whole thing. And of course, it's all a lie because he has to get her to do a thing. But the way, there was good banter there. There was good banter there. And I enjoyed that so much to see her in that role. As clearly as a pawn, but one with some agency.
I think that's the important thing. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, she's not there. If you don't do it, we're putting you back in jail. It's none of that. It's, I'm asking you to do this thing, and I don't really want you to do this thing. But she's like, fine, I'll do this thing.
And clearly, he doesn't fully know why he's supposed to completely bring her into the fold and what he's supposed to ask her to do initially.
So to the character's credit, he's just follows that whim, you know. But I mean, it's a John Woo movie, so they get the car scene where they're spinning around each other when the cars lock up to keep her from going off the edge.
Yeah, like another flamenco dance.
It's great.
Yeah.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, so I think John Woo is such a romantic director. I know a lot of people don't think that when they think of Woo, but you know, they're like, oh, the bullets, and it's bullets ballet, and you know, like The Killer, I think, is a crazy romantic movie, and he did a lot of romantic stuff. And this is, you need somebody like John Woo to take that on and to add some kind of beauty and unexpected grace in these moments, because otherwise you just have like a Fast and Furious thing happening in some of those scenes. But because, you know, you have over the top action, famously they knew like which action scenes they wanted to do before they were assembling the scripts, like, oh, Tom Cruise can do motorcycle or this or that. And and there's the little John Woo stamps, like there's going to be a dove, you know, or the Christian symbols, or there's going to be this. But it's so beautiful. And you do have Robert Towne writing the script. I know William Goldman said the only thing left from his script is like the beginning with the climbing up the rock, essentially. But otherwise, he said, I couldn't figure out a bad guy. And Robert Towne did. It's essentially the same story as Notorious. You know, okay. Cary Grant, yeah, getting her, Ingrid Bergman,
yes.
Yeah, to do, and he falls for her, and then she has to, then he gets mad at her for having to use her feminine wiles and seduce this guy just to spy on him. And in this case, for people who it might have been some time since they've seen it, and MI2, she is supposed to get back with an ex-boyfriend, Dougray Scott, the Scottish actor, who is an IMF agent who's gone rogue, and he's obtaining a really deadly, like, plague, essentially, and, you know, who knows what he'll do with it and who will get their hands on this thing. And so she's supposed to spy, and they set up this whole thing. So he thinks he's helping her in order to make it less obvious that, you know, she just happens back in his life. Like, they arrest her and like, ooh, he can get her out of it or something, you know, flatter his ego a little bit. So, yeah, there's even like a scene at the racetrack, which is straight out of Notorious. So, yeah.
Oh, I did not catch those parallels. I will have to watch Notorious again, clearly. And, you know, woe is me to have to watch Cary Grant. But but I love that movie.
Yeah.
I will check that out because I did not realize those parallels were there.
Oh no, you're fine.
So, see, I learned so much from you, Jen. I love to talk to you on your podcast.
No, we just love talking about movies. And what's great about this one is Nikki, myself, Priscilla Page is another person, and Jed Ayers. We all enjoy MI2. There are a lot of people that didn't like this movie. Oh, Walter Chaw liked it too. But, you know, they're like, oh my God, it's the worst one, or it's not even. I like how weird some of these movies get. And I like that they're very different. I mean, this is a strange, like the newest Mission Impossible is really fucking strange, you guys. You have to admit it. Like, you know, some of the things that happen in these movies are bananas. And so it's not like it just started with, I mean, they're ripping faces off and, you know, like, come on. And so that started with the first movie and they took it in a different direction. I think Cruise wanted Woo famously. It was after Face Off. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they took it. And then J.J. Abrams got a hold of it in 3. And 3 is completely different than 2. And, you know, Ghost Protocol opens with like a musical sequence almost. And set to 8, that the kick in the head. That's actually my favorite one, is Ghost Protocol. But this is a really good film. And I think people don't appreciate it. It's like, it's okay for these movies to be fun, you guys. Yeah.
Exactly. And it is fun. It is fun. They are, Cruise is always enjoyable when he's, I guess he just always, when it's good, he's very comfortable in it. And I feel like you see that. And, you know, whether Nicole Kidman had a role in getting Newton
but
in this movie,
still.
it's still an excellent choice. It was great. I was sad when she wasn't in the third one, honestly. I'm like, because she makes it out. Spoilers, but she makes it out. She doesn't die. You know, she doesn't die. She's not Fridge. She goes on to have a life, just not in my Mission Impossible movie. So I'm always sad about that. I'm like, bring back Naya, damn it. Bring back Naya.
They burn through the women in this franchise. It's almost like a James Bond situation, like Paula Patton from Ghost Protocol, or they get rid of we have to say his wife's dead and she's not really dead. And, you know, they're always losing a different brunette is kind of the joke. Like, oh, which brunette are we going to bail on this time? But, you know, they go through the women in this series, essentially. We don't know what's going on in the last one. Unfortunately, there's a delay, but it's a wonderful series and it's good to appreciate all these different people who bring different flavors to it. And I think Tandaway is amazing in this. I like that her character is the one that makes the decision, you know, spoiler alert, to inject herself rather than leave it up to these men when she gets a hold of the virus. And there's essentially a Mexican standoff. What do we do? Do I give the, you know, the thing to Gray Scott and then Tom Cruise? Like, what do I do? And she puts herself before it for the good of humanity, essentially, and is willing to sacrifice herself. So it's a really, you know, powerful role, because otherwise, you do feel bad. Like, she's essentially, you know, there's a really creepy scene where she's first shows up at Dougray's and she's got to sleep with him right away. And you're like, So you like that she makes these decisions on her own.
Yep. Dougray Scott, I love him, but oh my God, I hated him.
I know.
So
yeah, so right after gross. Ever yes. After, right? It's like, what happened to Prince Charming?
Yes. He's like, we're done with that now.
I know. Sometimes those quote unquote pretty boys love to play ugly. Yeah. And like, you know, I'm not going to be pigeonholed. Yeah. And, you know, he's a very good actor. Yeah. Yeah. And
very good. Yes.
My gosh. And I love.
I think he's going.
The other characters in the movie. I guess Ian McKellen was the first choice or something for Anthony Hopkins, but he turned it down. It's a really good cast. I love that we get Ving Rhames back. I thought it was important that, because I think Ving Rhames is kind of, you need him throughout the entire series, because he's the only one who could just be like Ethan or can size up this guy, because otherwise he's, you know, a little too larger than life at times. And he's able to keep him in check, I think.
Yes, I was always thrilled to see Ving Rhames come back for each and everyone, even if he's not in the main. Wasn't it Ghost Protocol? He comes in right at the end in the last scene of that one.
Yeah, not in it for most of it. Yeah.
But no, it's good.
Yeah, and so, I also love you get Brendan Gleeson, a young Brendan Gleeson in this. You know, and oh my gosh, Richard Roxburgh, who is Hugh Stamp, Ambrose's right hand man, is so good. Yes, it's such a weird role. The finger guy.
Yeah.
Who is the only one, like, you know, Scott's thinking with not his brain when it comes to Tandy Way. And so he's the one going, really? She's back? Have you thought about this? And he's not supposed to question it. And, you know, I think that goes against the male ego of, well, why wouldn't she want me? Yeah. So,
What does he say? Maybe I am gagged for it. So
I'm gagging for it or something like that. Oh my God. Yeah. He's gross. Yeah.
Very.
Yeah. But the movie is great. Really cool action, fun film. Does not deserve the hate that it gets.
None at all. And I'm glad that she doesn't die in it. And she should come back for 8.
Yes, I know. We're just going to have all these other characters come back. I also thought Jeremy Renner's character was great. Let's bring him back. Let's bring Paula Patton back. Let's bring some of these people back.
All of them. Yeah, I'm here all for it. Anthony Hopkins can come through again.
It's going to be a Return of the Jedi thing where even the dead people show up at the. No, I'm just kidding. Oh, man.
But flashback scenes. That's our ghost. They're flashback scenes. That's all. Yeah. Remember when? Then you have the scene. It's great.
Yeah, like a flashback or something. Yes. Oh my gosh. Yes. I think we mentioned the male jealousy that happens in MI2. We should probably backtrack and go to one that was in the 90s. I think it was shot in 96, released in 98. That's The Leading Man, which was new to you. John Dweegan, written by his wife, was Victoria Dweegan. I always loved this one, but I think I'm like one of 5 people who probably saw the thing. I remember that, or Virginia Dweegan, excuse me, is the screenwriter, not Victoria, my mistake. And this is a great film. I think, you know, John Bon Jovi, there was so much stuff around John Bon Jovi becoming an actor in this and Moonlight and Valentino and like, how dare he, you know, he's, you know, a singer, but he actually did spend time like taking lessons and making sure he really knew what he was doing before he set foot, because he didn't want to just be an asshole rock star showing up on sets and, you know, bringing down the entire film, essentially. So he tried his best, and I think he's very good in this film. He's playing an American movie star who comes in disgrace. There's a scandal. We don't know fully why, but he's come over to England to be in a high-profile play that was written by Felix Webb, who is played by Lambert Wilson. And he is married to his wife, who is played by the Italian actress Anna Galliana, I believe. My mistake if that's an error. Elena Webb is his wife. She's a writer as well. She hasn't had anything produced, but they've been married 14 years. They have kids. And Felix is cheating on his wife with the beautiful young aspiring actress that he eventually puts in this play, played by Tandy Way Newton, Hillary Rule. And John Bon Jovi shows up on set, kind of figure this out right away. I mean, he talks about working in theater. It's a fishbowl. Everybody gossips and, you know, it's so incestuous. And I saw this before I worked in the theater. And so I didn't realize how much, like, yeah, it is really wild. And so anyway, as this thing continues, he decides he's going to help his new buddy, the playwright Felix, out by offering to seduce his wife. Figures that'll be a good way to save her ego and help end the marriage so he can run off with Tandy Way Newton. And, you know, but does this guy have some ulterior motives? And he might actually like the wife more than just as a hobby. He's a player. Mm-hmm. Women keep throwing themselves at him, of course. And so I really enjoyed it. I'd love to know your thoughts on this one.
The movie should be called Men Are Terrible. They're so,
I know. Oh, it's male psychosexual jealousy, right? Yeah.
And yes, and the John Bon Jovi character, you're like, okay, well he's doing this thing. I mean, it's fine, it's whatever. People throw themselves at him all the time. He's an actor. But then it's just like the levels that you figure out as the movie goes on.
Yes.
And it's just like,
slimy.
You're terrible. And you're terrible. Oh my God. Run away, ladies, run away.
You don't need either of these men. Yes.
Mm-hmm. And to be fair, I think Tanaway's character Hillary is the one who ends up with exactly what she wants, which of course is the worst thing. She then becomes the partner of this man, and he's just exactly the way he was with his first wife, you know.
Yep, just insecure and just, yep. Mm-hmm. Like, and be careful just, what you wish for, essentially.
Exactly so. But I you know, thank you so much for bringing this to my attention, because it's just, you know, you have this situation, you know, the husband and the mistress and, you know, the wife, and then it just slowly rolls itself over to this other thing and then becomes this yet another thing by the end of it. And you're just like, just all the emotions are happening. And truly, the husband is terrible all the way through it all. But I mean, like, unexpected. I mean, yes, there is a gun shows up and you have to pay attention, because if the gun shows up, it's gonna get used.
You see the gun and the bullets. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah, it was great. It was great that way. And, you know, Fanny, she's so young, and she's so, again, the character she's playing has a line, you know, the heart wants what the heart wants. But she's like, look, it's me or not. So you don't talk to me again until you make this decision. And
yeah, she's got some integrity, you know, and she cares.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah.
About like what the wife must be going through too. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't, mm-hmm, oh, what a crazy bitch or something. I mean,
yes.
Yeah.
You know, they're not in that kind of competition with each other. I think she, for the most part, fully puts it on him. Mm-hmm. You're doing this thing. I'm not doing this thing. You are. So make a choice. Because I don't want to be out here giggling. But, you know, when you're in love and it's stupid, you just can't let go. You can't. And she's great in that role. She is that young ingenue. Is that the word? Yeah.
Yeah.
She's exactly that. She's promising. Everybody can see it. She's fresh blood. And John Bon Jovi's character also wants some of that. He's just out for himself.
He really
however
is.
That looks like, mm-hmm, you know, yeah. I think
and using people as pawns, or mm-hmm, I mean, it's also just pure, I can get sex here from a beautiful woman, here. Mm-hmm. But then also, mm-hmm, oh, wait, the wife has a play. Is it any good? Like, mm-hmm, I'm going to need to read this. And mm-hmm, so you see mm-hmm him scheming, he knows what buttons to push. I mean, he's a scoundrel too, of course. But you kind of love where it ends up for everyone. Part of the reason that when you suggested this actress and I like immediately zeroed in on, oh, this is because it just seemed like such a Nikki movie, because you could see these people showing up in one of your amazing short stories and you could write one about every single character and it would be fascinating and different. Yes. So when I started thinking about that, I'm like, oh my God, these people are straight out of a Nikki story. Yes. And I love that it's written by a woman who knows men's bullshit. You know, she's married to the director, and so she's been around creative people, and there's ego. There is sort of this you get really tight with people you're working with. Just intensely personal situations develop because you need to like learn to trust people immediately. Actors just close everything right away. It's very strange, but it's almost like they have to know, can I trust this person to like fail in front of them, or because I might do a scene and be a disaster, or we have to form this bond right away. And so, you know, it respects the creative process, but also all of the oddness that kind of goes in it, the way actors flirt shamelessly with everyone that they come across. When I worked in a theater, that was always the joke. I mean, first of all, everyone, I worked in a regional theater, and the guy who played the lead of Picnic just basically fucked his way through the entire building. And and it was just like, he was gorgeous. He knew it. All these guys were just, you know, they go from theater to theater, and they were, it's a profession that attracts like the most charming, charismatic people. And they weaponize that charm. And so like, I have memories of being, you know, in my 20s, and it's Phoenix. And so it was kind of a dicey area. You want people walking you out to your car at night. I worked in the box office. So some of the actors, you know, and getting serenaded on your way to your car, and you're like, you're not coming home with me. Like, you're not getting my phone number. You're not. So the kind of that rule of like, don't feed the actors, like you're not going home with an actor, you know, but, and not all of them, of course. There were some that were marvelous, and, you know, just some really hilarious memories of working when there was a sex comedy going on. And we had this one actress who was so great, but she had this scene she would do every night where she would fake an orgasm that was super loud. And it's hilarious. And so every time at like 8:10, you'd be doing whatever. And it was like, you knew what time it was, like 8:10. And then all of a sudden, oh, you know, and she's just going off and saying, and you just hear it. And I remember once I sold a ticket to like her husband's family, and he's like, I don't know that I want my parents to know what my girlfriend or my wife sounds like. But many wonderful, hilarious stories of working in the theater. But I love that the Dweegans know what they're doing, and same with the actors in this movie. They know who they're lampooning with love and affection, of course, but also you know, some of these people who, it's an incestuous group. Everyone's exes, and you know, everyone's in each other's business, and then the production ends and they all scatter to the winds. It's
like it never happened.
It's circus people. Yes.
That's apt. It is, I can't imagine to be around that. I mean, I work in engineering. It's its own kind of incestuous, but it's
I think every workplace is just differently, right?
Yeah, I would say architects and engineers, they mingle, but they don't stay mingled very often.
You know what we need now is like the leading man of engineers and architects set in Vegas.
There is that character. There is that man. So one day I will write my.
I've heard some stories. You've told me some stories. You know, I think you can do it for sure. If anyone can make it sexy and interesting and twisty, it is Nikki Dolson.
Thank you for the belief in me. I'm always working on something, so maybe that will finally see the light of day.
That'll finally percolate.
Yes.
You're like that weird ass conversation I had with Jen where she took us down 50 tangents. That's where this came from.
Yep.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Well, talking about, you know, larger than life men, that would bring us to the Guy Ritchie movie, Rock and Roll Up, which I remember seeing at the press screening and enjoying. I'm someone, I go back and forth on Ritchie. His flashy style, like Sherlock Holmes movies, kind of gave me a headache. It moved a little too quickly. But I loved, you know, Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels. I didn't like Snatch as much because I'd seen Lock, Stock first and they're kind of repetitive. But so I only like the style when it works. Like Wrath of Man actually is missing the style. And it's my favorite film. But when the substance of the plot or the narrative calls for it, then there's nobody better. And boy, does this one need that Ritchie stamp, because you have like a Raising Arizona style chase sequence. It's just, I remember this press screening being a blast, but like half the people were not getting it. They were like, what is this? And then the rest of us were like, can we watch, can somebody go back up to the projection booth and rewind it? Cause that was amazing. So I would love to know your relationship to the film, Ritchie, your thoughts.
Fucking loved it. Oh my God. Like, so much fun. This was like, I did not see it in the theater. I went on, I think I got to this movie by way of Tom Hardy and like Daniel Craig. So I went like hunting for more Tom Hardy movies, and also, which brought me to like Layer Cake. And I'm like, oh, look, that's Daniel Craig. And then from there, somehow rolled right into like Sexy Beast and then Rock and Roller. So I went through, like, it was this phase.
The British,
It was this phase of these movies that hit me all at the same time. And I have been a fan since the day I saw it. Like, it is the best thing. Sorry. There may be plot holes in it. I saw some chatter about that. And I'm like,
this is, I don't know if I completely follow this thing. Like, if I thought about it too hard, you know, a gun to my head. I don't know that I can explain the whole movie, but it works when you're watching it.
You are just there for the ride. And it was a fucking ride. It's such a good time.
I know.
But, you know, you have, you know, it's gangsters. It's, you know, London gangsters who are trying to do deals with Russian, you know, mafia folks. And everybody has an angle. And they're, you know, basically guys with a lot of money and, you know, criminal heads of their corners of the world, you know, going, you know, I'm going to give you this and you're going to give me that. And then we're going to have our deal. But there's all these people between them and who they have to rely on. And one of those people is Fandaway Newton's character, Stella.
Yes.
The accountant. And let's just go, I mean, like, she is like every woman who gets to be a certain age or at a certain level for a long time in a job that you're good at. You maybe get bored. I think she gets bored.
She likes the bad boys a little.
Yes. And she went, I would like to have, let's just see if we can, right?
Let's see if we can steal some money and, you know,
and not just like
maybe shag Gerard Butler, who knows?
But like, she steals what, seven million euro or whatever, it's some a large number, pounds, dollars, it's a lot of money, and she's like, let's just steal that, and they do, and it's
from
just
the
like,
Russians.
Nothing bad could happen from that. And, you know, like Guy Ritchie's plots, they are potentially convoluted. They are long and windy. But Stella, you know, is bored. And she's like, I don't even think she wants the money. I think she just wants to see if she could do it. So she makes this thing happen. And she gets a hold of these people and says, I have a thing for you to do. Will you do it? Now, the fact that it's Gerard Butler, and they have a little connection in kind of a way, a little bit like
it's a little sudden, right?
Yes, but there's a little bit like she's upper echelon in her career. Like she deals with all these people all the time, So she's not really fazed by the fact that they have money and they have power because she's seen it all. But she's used, she caters to these people. So, and in the grand scheme of things, it's another man. Gerard Butler's character, 1-2, is just another guy who wants her attention. So she's like, you know, like the scene where they're dancing, that terrible scene where they're dancing.
Oh my God, yeah.
Like, Gerard Butler's like, wow, my father was a dancer and it came down through me and it's in my DNA. And I don't know what the herky jerky fuck he is doing, but
no, dancing. Yeah.
And the scene, like when she goes to put out her cigarette and she's like, looks up and she's just like rolling her eyes, but then she does it and she matches his energy because that's what she does. She yes, becomes she the thing that they need.
People.
Yes, because they want to be catered to. So he's just another guy that she has to cater to get something she wants this time. And she breaks it all down for him. Like this, you know, while they're doing their dance and recover the dance, she's telling him, we're going to do it again. This is going to be the second time they steal this money and it's going to be great. And she is not a femme fatale, but an equal player in this chaos of a movie. Everybody's out for themselves. And, you know, this is started because she finally decided to take something for herself. So I will always applaud Stella. You know, Thandiwe Newton is great. She's fun. She's so fun in this.
Yeah, she's in on the joke. She knows she's ornamentation and stuff, but she is in on the joke, clearly. Mm-hmm. When I wrote my review, I can't remember the phrasing, but I was talking about the way she sort of, no matter what she's doing, she sort of sashays in and out of every scene. She's walking in a way that's like, I don't know if I did that, if you did that, like before off air, we were talking about like foot injuries. Like if we did this, Nikki, for me at least, all of my bones are breaking in my body. Like she just knows how to swing those hips. I mean, Elvis would watch Handaway in this movie and be like, you know what? I am kind of snooze. I'm like, you know, I'm on pause compared to this chick. And like, she's amazing. She knows how good she looks and she knows how to play with these men and where their attention is going and where she can direct them or misdirect them. And the way she just sort of prances in and out of these frames is fabulous. Or the scene where she's like eating food and bored, and then we find out what happened in the crazy, I mean, it's like right out of Looney Tunes or Raising Arizona, one of those chase sequences.
Yes.
So great. And that's so where great. You get like the Guy Ritchie cutting and the frenetic kinetic energy. And I think it's hard sometimes to be the woman in a Guy Ritchie movie, but she's amazing. Yes.
She's so great in this. She has equal footing. She is not a consequence of the plot, but driving it. Like she is an integral cog. If she doesn't do a thing, there is no movie.
Yeah.
Not really. You know, I mean, yes, there's this whole other plot that like ends up affecting her at the end, but this movie would be much shorter if she's not in it. Like, there's not enough plot there. Like, she has to do her thing. So, like, I love Ritchie's other movie, The Gentleman. Like, one of the last movies I saw before lockdown.
Oh, Michelle Dockery.
Yes. I was like, there should have been more of her.
Yeah.
Because she's so great on the screen. But again, she doesn't do anything. She is affected by what's going on.
Yeah.
Like she is drawn in and, you know, bad things happen. But not because of something she's done, because it's something somebody else has done. So she's a victim in this. Whereas in Rock and Rolla,
she's the Stella instigator.
She is in it. And she is just as much a crook as the rest of them. She's bored. She may not have, like, all of them have their reason, right? But she's in this. She's in it. And I loved it for that. She's such a great character. A character that at the end, you know, things happen off screen in this movie I do not believe she survived.
No, I do not either. But boy, does she have fun while she's here.
Yes. Delightful. Absolutely delightful. Loved it. And the other thing about that character is that there's the implication, again, that she's so used to these people. She has made moves to protect herself. Like, her husband, she has a marriage of convenience.
Oh, yeah.
Her husband is gay. They are best buds. They're besties. But that's the extent of that marriage, because she needs to look apart. And it's the way to get them to shut up about her.
Yep.
You know, she's like, I got to go home to my husband now. You know, she can use that if she wants, because she has one. You know, it is a mechanism to protect herself. And I loved it. I loved every piece of that. You get these little tiny pieces about her, and I loved all of them. She's so great. I love the character. You know, I give Richie all his props because he made Stella. Because Thandoway made an 8. That was such a great part for her.
It was. I know. I love all of your thoughts on that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's more fully realized than a lot of his women. And a lot of the characters, the male characters in this movie, too. Yeah.
You know, she does not get a witty, you know, name. She's not one, two, or mumble.
No.
Or, mumbles, know, but,
or, yeah.
But, you know, Handsome Bob or whatever, which is the Tom Hardy character. But they're so, she is on equal footing. And that is what I really love about it. Like I said, in The Gentleman, Michelle Dockery's character isn't equal because he makes sure of it. She holds her own. She can hold her own. But this isn't a story about her. She's drawn into it. And in Rock and Roll, Stella is a part of the story, and she has to be part of it, or it doesn't happen. So this is why I love that role, and Thandoway Newton just makes it so great. It's she's so much fun. I just can't say enough about it.
Yes. And I mean, looking back, it's amazing. She is one of those actresses that we've seen and stuff, and then you forget. Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, she was in that. Like looking in preparation for today, I was like, oh my God, that's right. She was Sally Hemings in Jefferson in Paris, and she was in Interview with the Vampire and Journey of August King, or August King, Truth About Charlie, when she's basically playing another version of the Audrey Hepburn charade, which isn't great. Crash, not a good movie, but she is very good.
Talk about Crash.
Pursuit of Happiness. Mm-hmm. W, she played Condoleezza Rice. I had completely forgotten that.
Yep.
One that I watched that neither one of us had seen, not a good film, she's great in it, is Half of a Yellow Sun, which is based on a famous, beloved novel. You know, like Rogue is a film, or a series that both Nikki and I enjoy, despite some of the, they are using it, it's a little hinky in places. Westworld. She also just does fun stuff with as a vocal artist. Like, she just was in the new Chicken Run, Dawn of the Nugget, for example. Another film that we were talking about is All the Old Knives, which was made for Amazon. Do you want to talk about that one?
So, the writer of All the Old Knives, Arlene Steinhauer, big fan of his. He writes espionage books there. I enjoy him. But All the Old Knives in particular, because again, it's very much in the thing, the realm of the things that I like. It is a couple and at odds and about their relationship. You know, it's over, but is it really over for both of them? Like, it's so my jam, so my jam. So, like, I had read that book, like, I would read it, like, once a year. Like, I love that book so much. So when they said they were making it, I was like, yes! Like, you know, I set all the reminders. And then when they said Chris Pine was in it, I was like, extra yes, I am in the theater. And then it was going to be streaming, and I was still there. So Thandoy Newton, Chris Pine, they are old CIA operatives who used to be together. And shit happens. And this is not about them, you know, racing around the world. It's about them having basically a lunch together, early dinner, and they rehashing how they got to where they are now, and also about a terrible thing that happened while they were the last job that she did before she retired to like settle down with a man and have some kids. She wanted out. And you get this, you know, you get flashbacks of what happened and flashbacks, you know, their relationship and the lies that were told and all of that. But really you have Chris Pine and Thandie Newton sitting across from each other, like sparring a little bit. And it's so like, I'm sorry, like they it's so good. Just when they're on screen together, like that's best part of it. I do not think overall that's the greatest movie ever. But
no, but they're great.
The two of them together, that dynamic, just the way that like you get the little digs about who they used to be, and you know, and the fact that I think there's still hurt there on everybody's side.
You don't fully know, and then things come out, and it's fascinating. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, like again,
chess match a little bit.
Yes. Yes. And again, this is a woman who made a decision to protect herself.
Yep.
Like in the book, it's very much more directly talked about. But in the movie, it's, you know, you get the impression that she's just, this marriage was her exit out and the way she could, you know, her parachute out of the CIA and away from him and the things that she knows.
Yep.
And she just, for me, she sold it. She's, you know, she was an analyst. They were all analysts.
Mm-hmm.
They're not field agents. They were bringing assets or what have you, but they were in the thick of just really terrible things that were happening. And for me, she sold that. She's empathetic. She's a team player. You get all of that. And the deep,
she's looking for these parts too, where she gets agency and she gets to, show us complexity, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And this, you know, she embodies those roles, and that's why I'm always, always grateful when she's in a thing, cause I know she's in Bring It. She's not signing up to do a little thing just to be that,
I mean, sometimes she does that, of course, every actor does for money, but like, no, but even like when she was in Solo, Star Wars Story, she was hoping, it was the first lead part in one of these movies, I think, for a Black actress, and that was playing like a human character. I'm not fully sure. I didn't actually see the film, but I know she wasn't happy with what happened to the character in the end, but what she signed on for and what she was hoping for was a different thing, and she made it clear. She's someone who has kind of divided people a little bit because she does say things. And she didn't for so long, and I think part of that comes from she is the mother of two daughters, and one of them is an actress, the other one is a screenwriter. I don't know what the son does, but she said, you know, I want them to know about what the industry is like and what it does. And and so I know, like, because she wasn't 100% complimentary. She was diplomatic about Tom Cruise, but about how stressful it was to make MI2 with him and in scenes. And so some people didn't like her saying certain things about that. And then a horrible thing that had happened to her in her audition experiences as a teenage girl. And, you know, she was kind of an early proponent for being open and honest about things. So, and I think maybe as she started to do that and then re-embrace her credit of this is my name and this is how it's said and how it's spelled, and then taking on these parts. And I think, she didn't want to just take on some roles just because.
They had to be the right thing for her. And you know, it's what you can do when you've been in the game long enough. You have an understanding
for this many decades.
An understanding of what you have to lose, what you're willing to sacrifice, for that.
Yes.
And you know.
And she's gotten like BAFTAs and Emmys at this point, Order of British Empire. So she's enough, like, could not have made these moves around 2000, essentially, or 2010 even, I think.
I mean, it's like any of your early jobs, you're kind of just, you know, asking for the paycheck.
Exactly.
And trying to do what you can to change that environment. But you know, once you've got you're in it long enough, you're like, look, I don't need to do this. Like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, I've had enough. Yes.
Yeah. And good on her for saying so. And still, you know, her daughter who did The Last of Us with Pedro Pascal.
Yes.
You know, I don't know how old she is in that. I think she's still a teenager in that, literally. So I'm like, she lets her daughter do this thing, so she's not going to let her in to the business as a minor without saying something, and good on her for that.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Are there any other parts or films of hers that we didn't mention that you want to give a shout out to?
She's in one called, I think it's In God's Country, or maybe it's called Just God's Country.
Okay.
It's based on a Joe Lansdale story, short story. And I think they tweaked it from the story, but basically she's playing a retired cop who is in like the backwoods of like Vermont or somewhere like that, or maybe it's North Carolina. But nonetheless, she has neighbors or you know, these people in this area, they're used to doing what they want, and they come on her property and there's a clash there.
Okay.
And it's very high on my list of things to watch. The short story, anybody can read the short story ends before, you know, what everything's leading up to. Will somebody die? Wouldn't it, right before their big clash happens? And I assume that that's still going to happen in the movie, but I'm all for it. God's Country. It looks like it's going to be great.
Ooh, I'm going to have to see that one. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I mean, short stories are a weird thing, and you know, like somebody buys a short story and then they like riff on it to do what they want, but everything I've seen on it just says that it's really close to that kind of ending. They may have changed her job, like, but that's it seems really great, and I look forward to that one.
Very cool. Well, I want to thank you so much for doing this. Such a cool topic. And yes. I liked that we got to celebrate this actress who, you're right, just doesn't get enough credit for what she brings to films. Yes.
No, she doesn't. She needs more. Fandom needs everything.
Yes. Yeah.
She's great.
Exactly. Cue up her stuff, add it to your letterbox. Mm-hmm. And we hope you enjoyed this. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
I also want to thank everyone for listening, especially my patrons who support the show and help fund my research equipment, film rentals, RSS fees, and more for as little as $1 per month at the Film Intuition Patreon, which is the home base for the show. Other ways you can support the podcast are by sharing, reviewing, and subscribing to Watch with Jen wherever you get your podcasts, and also checking out the cool merch store hosted and created by our talented logo designer, Kate Gabrielle. You can find the merchandise store, including shirts, tote bags, stickers, and more by visiting filmintuition.com and clicking on the shop link. The show's theme music is Solo Acoustic Guitar by Jason Shaw and is available in the free music archive. You can also reach me or interact with Watch with Jen anytime on Twitter, either at Film Intuition or our Watch with Jen account as well. Well, until next time, please take care and happy movie watching. This is Jen Johans at filmintuition.com and Film Intuition on social media and Letterboxd. And this is Watch with Jen.